in proportion to the horror he had experienced at the hospital. But this little bloody rag of a person didn't look as if it could ever get up again, much less hurt anyone. It was only a child, a wounded child. Like seeing someone you love wasting away with cancer and then be shown a cancer cell through a microscope. Nothing. That? That did this? That little thing? Destroy my heart. He let out a sob, his head falling forward until it hit the edge of the bathtub with a dull, echoing thud. He could not kill a child, a sleeping child. He simply couldn't. Even though that's how it has managed to survive. It, not a child, it. It had attacked Virginia and it had killed Yucca. It, the creature lying in front of him, this creature who would do it again to other people, this creature that was not a person, it wasn't even breathing, and even so, its heart was beating, like an animal in hibernation. Think about the others. A poisonous snake living among people. You think you shouldn't kill it, simply because for the moment it appears defenseless? But in the end, that wasn't what helped him make up his mind. It was when he looked at the face again, the face covered in a thin film of blood, and he thought it looked like it was smiling. Smiling at all the evil it had done. Enough. He raised the kitchen knife above the creature, moved his legs back a little so he could put all his weight behind the thrust, and... Ah! Oscar screamed. The old guy didn't flinch. He simply froze, turned his head towards Oscar, and said slowly, I have to do it. Do you understand? Oscar recognized him. He was one of the drunks who lived in the apartment complex and said hello to him from time to time. Why is he doing this? But that was neither here nor there. The important thing was that the guy had a knife in his hands, a knife that was pointing directly at Ile's chest as he lay there in the bathtub, naked, exposed. Don't do it! The man's head moved to the right, to the left, more as if he was looking for something on the floor than signalling refusal. No! He turned back to the tub, to the knife. Oscar wanted to explain that the thing in the bathtub was his friend, that it was his... that he had a present for the thing in there, that it was Ile. Wait! The point of the knife lay against Ile's chest, pressed in so hard it almost punctured Ile's skin. Oscar didn't know exactly what he was doing when he shoved his hand into the pocket of his jacket and took out the cube, showed it to the guy. Look! Laka only saw it in the corner of his eye as a sudden burst of colour in all the grey that surrounded him. Despite the bubble of determination that enveloped him, he couldn't help turning his head to see what it was. One of those cubes in the boy's hand, bright colours, looked completely sick in the current context, a parrot among crows. For a second he was hypnotised by the toy's vividness. Then he turned his gaze back to the bathtub, to the knife that was on its way down between the ribs. All I need to do is press. A change. The creature's eyes were open. He tensed in order to drive the knife in all the way, and then his temple exploded. The cube creaked when one of the corners smashed into the guy's head, and it was wrenched from Oscar's hand. The guy fell to one side, landing on a plastic jug that gave way, hitting the side of the tub with a thundering noise like a bass drum. Ile sat up. From the bathroom doorway, Oscar could only see the back of his body. The hair was plastered against the back of his head, and his back was one big open wound. The man tried to get back on his feet, but Ile didn't so much jump as fall out of the bathtub, landed in his lap. A child seeking comfort from his father. Ile wrapped his arms around the man's neck and pulled his head closer to whisper tender words. Oscar backed away from the bathroom as Ile bit the neck. Ile hadn't seen him, but the man had. His gaze locked with Oscar's held him fast as Oscar moved backward towards the hall. sorry. Oscar didn't manage to get any sound out, but his lips formed the word before he turned the corner and the eye contact was broken. He stood with his hand on the door handle as the guy screamed. Then the sound stopped abruptly, as if a hand had been clamped over his mouth. Oscar hesitated, then he closed the door and locked it. Without looking to the right, he walked down the hall to the living room, sat down in the armchair, started to hum in order to drown out the noise from the bathroom. Part 5. Let the Right One Slip In. These days, this is my only chance to say my piece. Bob Hund, struggling against the current. Let the right one in. Let the old dreams die. Let the wrong ones go. They cannot do what you want them to do. Morrissey, Let the Right One Slip In. From the Daily Update, 1645, Monday, the 9th of November, 1981. The so-called ritual killer was apprehended by police on Monday morning. He was tracked down in a basement office in Blackaberry in West Stockholm. Police spokesman Bengt Lawn. A person has been apprehended, that is correct. Are you sure it is the same man you have been looking for? Quite sure. Certain factors, however, complicate a positive identification at this time. What kind of factors? Unfortunately, I can't go into further details at the moment. After the man was apprehended, he was transported to the hospital. His condition was described as critical. Together with the suspect, the police also found a 16-year-old boy. The boy was physically unharmed, but is said to be in a state of severe shock and has been taken to the hospital for further monitoring. The police are searching the area for further information regarding the chain of events. His Royal Highness Carl Gustaf today opened the new bridge over the Alma Sound in Bohuslän. During the opening speech, from diagnostic notes made by the surgeon Professor T. Halberry, copied for police files. Preliminary investigation complicated by spasmodic muscle action, unlocalized stimulation of central nervous system, heart function suspended, muscle movement stops at 1425, autopsy yields hitherto unobserved, severely deformed inner organs. Like the eel that dead and butchered jumps in the frying pan. Never before observed in human tissue. Asked to retain the cadaver. Sincerely. From the newspaper Western Suburbs, week 46. Who killed our cats? The only thing I have left is her collar, says Svea Nordstrom as she points to the slushy field where her pet and 8 others belonging to neighbouring homeowners were found. From the television news program Current Events, Monday the 9th of November, 2100. Earlier this evening, police entered the apartment believed to belong to the so-called ritual killer who was apprehended this morning. A call from a member of the public helped police locate the apartment in Blackaberry, some 50 meters from where the man was apprehended. We have our reporter, Falka Almaker, at the scene. Emergency technicians are removing the body of a man found in the apartment. The man's identity is not known at this time. It appears the apartment is unoccupied, although there are certain indications that people have been in the apartment recently. What are the police doing right now? They have been going door to door all day, but if they have received helpful information in the process, they have made no announcement to that effect. Thank you, Falka. The Shan Bridge, which was finished 6 weeks before the estimated completion date, was opened today by His Royal Highness Carl Gustaf. Monday, the 9th of November. Pulses of blue light across the bedroom ceiling. Oscar is lying in bed with his hands behind his head. Under his bed there are 2 cardboard boxes. There is money in one, masses of bills, and 2 bottles of tea red. The other is filled with puzzles. The box of clothes was left behind. In order to conceal the boxes, Oscar has placed his hockey game at an angle in front of them. Tomorrow he'll carry them down into the basement, if he has the energy. His mum is watching TV. shouting out something about how their building is on the screen. But he only has to get up and go to the window to see the same thing from another angle. He threw the boxes from Ile's balcony over to his own while it was still light, while Ile was washing himself. When he came out of the bathroom, the wounds on his back had healed, and he was slightly intoxicated from the alcohol in the blood. They lay in bed together, held each other. Oscar told him what had happened in the subway.
"I'm sorry," Ile said, "about starting this." "No, it's all right."
Silence for a long time. Then Ile asked, hesitantly,
"Would you want to become like me?" "No. I would like to be with you, but..." "No, of course you don't. I understand."
In the evening, they finally stood up, put their clothes on. They were standing with their arms around each other in the living room when they heard the saw. The lock was being removed. They ran to the balcony, jumped over the railing, landing fairly softly in the bushes below. From inside the apartment, they heard someone say, "What in the world?" They curled up under the balcony. There was no time. Ile turned his face to Oscar's, said,
"Hi,"
closed his mouth, then pressed a kiss on Oscar's lips. For a few seconds, Oscar saw through Ile's eyes, and what he saw was himself, only much better, more handsome, stronger than what he thought of himself, seen with love. For a few seconds. Voices in the apartment next door. The last thing Ile had done before they got up was remove the piece of paper with the Morse code. Now strange feet are clomping around in the room where Ile once lay and tapped on the wall to him. Oscar holds his hand up against the wall.
Ile.
Tuesday, the 10th of November. Oscar did not go to school on Tuesday. He lay in his bed and listened to the sounds through the wall, wondered if they would find anything that would lead them to him. In the afternoon, it grew quiet, and they had still not come by. At that point, he got up, put his clothes on, and walked over to Ile's. The door to the apartment was sealed. No one was allowed in. While he stood there looking, a police officer walked by on the stairs. But he was only a curious boy from the neighbourhood. When the sun went down, Oscar carried the boxes down into the basement and put an old rug over them. Would decide later what to do with them. If some thief decided to break into their storage unit, he would hit the jackpot. He sat in the darkness of the basement for a long time, thought about Ile, Tommy, the old guy. Ile had told him everything, that he hadn't meant for things to turn out the way they did. But Tommy was alive and would be fine. That's what his mum had told Oscar's mum. He was going to be coming home tomorrow. Tomorrow. Tomorrow, Oscar would go back to school. To Johnny, Thomas, to... We'll have to start training him again. Johnny's cold, hard fingers across his cheeks, pressing the soft flesh against his jaws until the corners of his mouth were unwillingly forced up. Squeal like a pig. Oscar interlaced his fingers, leaned his face against them, looked at the little hill that the rug over the boxes made. He got up, pulled the rug away, and opened the box of money. 1,000 kroner notes, 100 kroner notes, all mixed up, a few bundles of banknotes. He dug around the notes until he found one of the plastic bottles, then he went up to the apartment and got some matches. A lone spotlight cast a cold, white glow onto the schoolyard. Outside its circle of light, you could see the outlines of playground structures. The ping-pong tables, that were so cracked you couldn't play on them with anything other than a tennis ball, were covered in slush. A few rows of windows of the school were illuminated. Evening classes. For this reason, one of the side doors was unlocked. He made his way through the darkened corridors to his homeroom, stood for a while looking at the desks. The classroom looked unreal at night like this, as if ghosts silently whispering were using it for their school, whatever that would look like. He walked over to Johnny's desk, opened the lid, and doused tea red onto it. Tomas's desk, same thing. He stood without moving for a second in front of Mika's desk, decided not to. Then he went and sat at his own desk, letting it soak in like you do with charcoal. I'm a ghost. Boo, boo. He opened the lid and took out his copy of Firestarter, smiled at the title, and slipped it into his bag. The exercise book where he had written a story he liked, his favourite pen. They all went into the bag. Then he stood up, made a final round of the classroom, and enjoyed simply being there, in peace. Johnny's desk gave off a chemical smell when he raised the lid again, took out the matches. No. Wait. He went and got two rough-hewn wooden rulers from a shelf at the back of the classroom, rigged up Johnny's desk with one so it would stay open, Tomas's with the other. Otherwise they would stop burning the moment he let the lids drop. Two hungry prehistoric animals gaping for food. Dragons. He lit one match, held it in his hand until the flame was large and clear, then dropped it. It fell from his hand, a yellow drop, and whoosh! Damn! His eyes stung when a purple comet's tail shot up out of the desk, licked his face. He sprang back, had expected it to burn like charcoal, but the desk was fully lit, one big bonfire reaching up to the ceiling. It was burning too much. The fire danced, flickered across the classroom walls, and a garland of large letters made of paper hanging over Johnny's desk broke off and fell to the floor, the P and Q burning. The other half of the garland swung in a large arc and fell onto Tomas's desk, which immediately burst into flames with the same whoosh, a searing explosion. Oscar ran from the classroom with his school bag bouncing on his hip. What if the whole school? When he reached the end of the corridor, the bell started to ring, a metallic clatter that filled the building, and it was only when he was well down the stairs that he realized it was the fire alarm. Out in the schoolyard, the large bell rang fiercely to assemble students who were not there, gathered up the school's ghosts, and followed Oscar halfway home. Only when he reached the old Consume grocery store and could no longer hear the bell did he relax. He walked calmly the rest of the way. In the bathroom mirror, he saw that the tops of his eyelashes were rolled up, singed. When he touched them with his finger, they broke off. Wednesday, the 11th of November. Home from school. Headache. The phone rang around 9. Oscar didn't answer. In the middle of the day, he saw Tommy and his mum walk past outside the window. Tommy walked bent over, slowly, like an old person. Oscar ducked down under the windowsill as they went by. The phone rang every hour. Finally, at 12 o'clock, he picked it up.
This is Oscar.
Hi. My name is Bertil Svanberg, and I am, as you may know, the principal of the school that you...
He hung up. The phone rang again. Oscar stood there for a while, looking at the ringing phone, imagining the principal sitting in his checkered sports coat, fingers drumming on the desk, making faces. Then he put his clothes on and went down into the basement. Picked at the puzzles, poked at the little white wooden box where the 1,000 pieces of the glass egg glittered. Elay had only taken a couple of 1,000 and the cube. He closed the lid of the puzzle box, opened the other, mixed up the rustling banknotes with his hand, took a fistful of them, threw them on the ground, pushed them down into his pockets, took them out one by one, played the boy with the gold pants until he grew tired of it. 12 wrinkled 1,000 kroner and 700 kroner bills lay at his feet. He gathered the 1,000 kroner notes into a pile and folded them up, put the 100 kroner notes back, closed the box. Back in the apartment, found an envelope that he stuffed the money into. Sat with the envelope in his hand,
and wondered what he should do. Didn't want to write. Someone could recognize his handwriting. The phone rang.
Stop it. Understand that I don't exist anymore.
Someone wanted to have a long talk with him. Someone wanted to ask him if he realized the gravity of what he had done, which he did. As did Johnny and Thomas, probably. Quite well, in fact. Nothing more to talk about. He walked over to his desk and took out his rubber letters and inkset. In the middle of the envelope he stamped a T and an O. The first M went askew, but the second one was straight, like the Y. When he opened the door to Tommy's building with the envelope in his coat pocket, he was more nervous than he had been at school the night before. His heart thumping, he gingerly eased the envelope through the letter slot in Tommy's door so no one would come to the door or catch sight of him through the window. But no one came, and when Oscar was back in his apartment, he felt a little better. For a while. Then it sneaked up on him again.
I won't be here.
At 3 o'clock, his mum came home, several hours earlier than usual. At that point, Oscar was sitting in the living room with the Vikings album. She walked into the room, lifted the needle, and turned off the record player. By her face, he sensed that she knew.
How are things with you?
Not so good.
No?
She sighed, sat down on the couch.
The principal called me, at work. He told me that there was a fire there last night, at your school.
Really? Did it burn to the ground?
No, but...
She closed her mouth, her gaze getting stuck in the hooked rug for a few seconds. Then she lifted her eyes and met his.
Oscar, was it you?
He looked straight back at her and said,
No.
Pause.
No. It's just that it seems that although much of the classroom was destroyed, that Johnny's and Thomas's desks, that it was there it had started.
Oh.
And they were apparently quite sure that it was you. But it wasn't.
His mum sat on the couch, breathing through her nose. They sat a metre apart, an endless distance.
They want to talk to you.
I don't want to talk to them. It was going to be a long evening. There was nothing good on TV. That night, Oscar couldn't sleep. He got up out of bed, tiptoed to the window. He thought he saw something in the jungle gym down in the playground, but it was just his imagination, of course. Nonetheless, he continued to stare at the shadow down there until his eyelids grew heavy. When he got back into bed, he still couldn't sleep. He gently tapped on the wall. No answer. Just the dry sound of his own fingertips, knuckles against the concrete, knocking on a door that was closed forever. Thursday, the 12th of November. Oscar threw up in the morning and was allowed to stay home another day. Despite the fact that he had only slept a few hours the night before, he was unable to rest. A gnawing anxiety in his body forced him around the apartment. He picked things up, looked at them, put them back. It was as if there was something he had to do, something absolutely necessary, but he simply couldn't think of what it was. At the time, he had thought he was doing it while he set fire to Johnny's and Thomas's desks. Then he had thought it was giving the money to Tommy. But that wasn't it. It was something else. A great theatre performance that was now over. He paced back and forth on the empty, darkened stage and swept up that which had been left behind, when it was something else. But what? When the mail arrived at 11, there was only a single letter. His heart made a somersault in his chest as he picked it up, turned it over. It was addressed to his mum. South Ingbald School District was printed in the upper right-hand corner. Without opening it, he ripped it into pieces and flushed them down the toilet. Regretted it. Too late. He didn't care what was written in it, but there would be even more trouble if he started messing around with this than if he just let it be. But it didn't matter. He undressed, put on his bathrobe,
stood in front of the mirror in the hall, studied himself, pretended he was someone else, leaned over to kiss the glass. At the same time that his lips met the cold surface, the phone rang. Without thinking, he lifted the receiver.
"Hi, it's me."
"Oscar?"
"Yes?"
"Hi. Fernando here."
"What?"
"Avila. Mr. Avila."
"Oh, yeah. Hi."
"I just wanted to ask, are you coming to the training tonight?"
"I'm a bit sick."
Silence on the other end. Oscar could hear Mr. Avila's breaths. One, two. Then,
"Oscar, if you did or did not, I do not care about this. If you want to talk, we talk. If you do not want to talk, we don't. But I want you to come to training."
"Why?"
"Because, Oscar, you cannot sit like caracol, how do you say, the snail, in the shell. If you aren't sick, you will get sick. Are you sick?"
"Yes."
"Then you need physical fitness training. You will come tonight."
"What about the others?"
"The others? What are the others? If they are stupid, I will say, boo, they stop. But they are not stupid. This is training."
Oscar didn't reply.
"Okay. You'll come?"
"Yes."
"Good. See you later."
Oscar put the phone down, and everything was quiet around him again. He didn't want to go to the workout session, but he wanted to see Mr. Avila. Maybe he could go a little earlier, see if he was there, then go home when the session started. Not that Mr. Avila would accept that, but... He completed another round of the apartment, packed his workout things, mainly to have something to do. Lucky he hadn't started the fire in Mika's desk, since Mika would be going to the gym. Although, maybe it got destroyed anyway because it was right next to Johnny's. How much had actually been destroyed? Something to ask. The phone rang again around 3 o'clock. Oscar hesitated before picking it up, but after the flicker of hope he had felt after seeing the lone envelope, he couldn't resist answering it.
"Hello, this is Oscar."
"Hi, it's Juan."
"Hi.
What's up?"
"Nothing much.
Want to do something tonight?"
"When? What?"
"Oh, about 7 or something."
"No, I'm going to the gym."
"Oh, okay. Too bad. Catch you later."
"Juhan?"
"Yeah?"
"I heard there was a fire in our classroom. Did a lot get destroyed?"
"Nah, just a couple of desks."
"Nothing else?"
"No, some papers and that."
"Oh, your desk is fine."
"Oh, good. Okay, bye."
"Bye."
Oscar hung up with a strange feeling in his stomach. He had thought that everyone knew it was him. But that's not how Juhan had sounded. And his mum had said that a lot had been destroyed. But she could have been exaggerating, of course. Oscar chose to believe Juhan. He had seen it, after all.
"Oh, Christ's sake!"
Juhan hung up and looked around hesitantly. Jimmy shook his head, blew smoke out of Johnny's bedroom window.
"That was the worst I've heard."
In a meek voice, Juhan said,
"It's not so easy."
Jimmy turned to face Johnny, who was sitting on the bed, rubbing a tassel from the bedspread between his fingers.
"What happened? Half the classroom burned down?"
Johnny nodded.
"Everyone in the class hates him."
"And you?"
Jimmy turned towards him again.
"You say that, what was it you said? Some paper? Do you think he'll go for that?"
Juhan lowered his head, embarrassed.
"I didn't know what to say. I thought he would get suspicious if I said that..."
"Yes, yes, Danny's done. Now we just have to hope he turns up."
Juhan's gaze flew back and forth between Johnny and Jimmy. Their eyes were empty, lost in images of the coming evening.
"What are you guys going to do?"
Jimmy leaned forward in his seat, brushing away a little ash that had fallen on his sweater, and said slowly,
"He burned it.
everything we had from our dad. So what we're going to do is something that doesn't concern you. Understand? His mum came home at 5:30. The lies, the distrust from the night before, still hung like a cold cloud between them, and his mum went straight to the kitchen, started making an unnecessary amount of noise with the dishes. Oscar shut his door, lay on his bed, and stared up at the ceiling. He could go somewhere, out into the yard, down into the basement, to the square, take the subway, but there still wasn't any place, no place where he... nothing. He heard his mum walk to the phone and dial a lot of numbers. His dad's, probably. Oscar shivered a little. He pulled the blankets over him, sat up with his head against the wall, listening to the sound of his mum and dad's conversation. If he could talk to Dad. But he couldn't. It never happened. Oscar pulled the blanket around himself, pretending to be an Indian chieftain, indifferent to everything as his mum's voice rose. After a while she started to yell, and the Indian chieftain fell down on the bed, pressed the blanket, his hands over his ears. "It's so quiet inside your head. It is like outer space." Oscar made the lines, colours, dots in front of his eyes into planets, distant solar systems that he travelled through, landed on comets, flew for a while, jumped off and hovered freely in weightlessness until something pulled on his blanket and he opened his eyes. Mum was standing there, her lips twisted, her voice abrupt and sharp as she talked. "So, now your father has told me that he, on Saturday, that you... where were you? Tell me, where were you? Can you tell me that?" His mum pulled on the blanket up by his face, her throat tense to a hard, thick sinew. "You're never going there again. Never. You hear me? Why didn't you say anything? I mean, that bastard. People like him shouldn't have children. He's not going to see you anymore. And then he can sit there and drink as much as he likes. You hear me? We don't need him. I am so..." His mum twirled abruptly away from the bed, slammed the door so hard the walls shook. Oscar heard her rapidly dial the long number again, swearing when she missed a digit, had to start over. A few seconds after she finished dialing, she started to yell. Oscar crept out from under his blanket, grabbed his workout bag, and went out into the hall, where his mum was so preoccupied with yelling at his dad that she didn't notice that he had slipped on his shoes and walked up to the front door without tying them. It was only when he was standing in the stairwell that she saw him. "Wait a second. Where do you think you're going?" Oscar banged the door shut and ran down the stairs, kept running, the soles of his shoes smattering, on his way to the pool. Roger. Preba. With his plastic fork, Jimmy jabbed in the direction of the two guys emerging from the subway station. The bite that Johnny had just taken from his shrimp sandwich lodged halfway down his throat, and he was forced to swallow again to get it down. He looked quizzically at his brother, but Jimmy's attention was directed at the guys on their way over to the hot dog stand, greeted them. Roger was thin and had long, straggly hair, a leather jacket. The skin on his face was punctured by hundreds of small craters and appeared shrunk since the cheekbones stood out sharply and his eyes seemed unnaturally large. Preba wore a denim jacket with the arms cut off and a T-shirt under that and nothing else, even though it was only a couple of degrees above zero. He was a big guy, spilling out over the edges, cropped hair, an out-of-shape paratrooper. Jimmy said something to them, pointed, and they took off in the direction of the transformer station above the subway tracks. Johnny whispered, "Why are they coming?" "To help out, of course." "Do we need help?" Jimmy sniffed and shook his head, as if Johnny didn't know the first thing about how these things worked. "How are you planning to get around the teach?"
"Avila?"
"Yeah. You think he would just let us walk on in and... you know?" Johnny had no answer for this, so he followed his brother in behind the little brick house. Roger and Prebber were standing in the shadows with their hands in their pockets, stamping their feet. Jimmy took out a metallic cigarette case, flicked it open, and held it out to the other two. Roger studied the 6 hand-rolled cigarettes inside, said,
"My, my, pre-rolled and everything. Why, thank you,"
and used 2 thin fingers to nab the thickest one. Prebber made a face so he looked like one of the old balcony guys on the Muppet Show.
"They lose their freshness if they sit around."
Jimmy wiggled the case in an inviting way, said,
"Quit your whining, you old woman. I rolled them an hour ago. And this isn't any of that Moroccan shit you run around with. This is the real thing."
Prebber sucked in his breath and helped himself to one of the cigarettes. Roger helped him light it. Johnny looked at his brother. Jimmy's face was sharply silhouetted against the light from the subway station platform. Johnny admired him, wondered if he would ever be someone who dared to say, "You old woman," to someone like Prebber. Jimmy also took a cigarette and lit it. The paper at the tip burned for a moment before it simply glowed. He inhaled deeply, and Johnny was enveloped by the sweet smell that always clung to Jimmy's clothing. They smoked in silence for a while. Then Roger held out his joint to Johnny.
"You want a drag or what?"
Johnny was about to hold his hand out for it, but Jimmy hit Roger on the shoulder.
"Idiot! Want him to turn out like you?"
"That's so bad."
"Okay for you, maybe. Not for him."
Roger shrugged, took back his offer. It was 6:30 when everyone was done smoking, and when Jimmy spoke, it was with an exaggerated articulation, every word a complicated sculpture he had to get out of his mouth.
"Okay, this is Johnny, my brother."
Roger and Prebber nodded knowingly. Jimmy took hold of Johnny's chin with a slightly clumsy movement, turned his head so the other two saw it in profile.
"Check out his ear. That's what this squirt did. That's what we're going to take care of."
Roger took a step forward, squinted at Johnny's ear, out of it.
"Shit. It looks bad." "I'm not asking for an expert opinion. You just listen. Then this will be..."
The steel gates in the corridor between the brick walls were unlocked. The echo from Oscar's footsteps went kaplof, kaplof, as he walked to the door of the swimming pool, pulled it open. A damp warmth wafted over his face, and a cloud of vapour billowed out into the cold corridor. He hurried in and shut the door. He kicked his shoes off and kept going into the locker room. Empty. He heard the sound of running water from the shower room, a deep voice singing,
"Bésame, bésame mucho. Como sufriere esta noche la última vez."
Mr. Avila. Without taking off his jacket, Oscar sat down on one of the benches, waited. After a while, both the splashing and the singing stopped, and the teacher came out with a towel around his hips. His chest was completely covered in black curly hair with splashes of grey. Oscar thought he looked like something from another planet. Mr. Avila saw him, smiled broadly.
"Oscar, so you crawl out of your shell after all?"
Oscar nodded.
"It got a bit stuffy."
Mr. Avila laughed, scratched his chest. The tips of his fingers disappeared in the fuzz.
"You are early."
"Yes, I was thinking..."
Oscar shrugged. Mr. Avila stopped scratching himself.
"You were thinking?"
"I don't know."
"To talk?"
"No, I just..."
"Let me take a look at you."
Mr. Avila strode up to Oscar, studied his face, nodded.
"Uh-huh. Okay."
"What?"
"It was you."
Mr. Avila pointed to his eyes.
"I see. You have burned your eyebrows. No, what is it called? Underneath.
Lashes?"
"Eyelashes, yes. A little in the hair as well. Hmm. If you don't want anyone to know for sure, you have to cut your hair a little. Eyelashes grow fast. Monday it is gone. Gasoline?"
"Tea red."
Mr. Avila expelled air through his lips, shook his head.
Very dangerous. Probably,
Mr. Avila touched Oscar's temple. You a little crazy. Not a lot, but a little. Why T-Red?
I found it.
Found? Where?
Oscar looked up at Mr. Avila's face, a damp, kindly stone. And he wanted to tell him all of it. He just didn't know where to start. Mr. Avila waited. Then he said,
To play with fire is very dangerous. Can become a habit. Is no good method. Much better physical exercise.
Oscar nodded, and the feeling disappeared. Mr. Avila was great, but he would never understand.
Now you get changed, and I show you a little technique with bench press, okay?
Mr. Avila turned to go back to his office, stopped outside the door.
And Oscar, you don't worry. I say nothing to nobody if you don't want. Sound good? We can talk more after the training session.
Oscar changed his clothes. When he was finished, Patrick and Hasse arrived, two guys from 6A. They said hi to Oscar, but he thought they looked at him a little too long, and when he walked into the gym, he heard them start whispering to each other. A sense of despondency settled in the pit of his stomach. He regretted having come here. But shortly thereafter, Mr. Avila entered, now in a T-shirt and shorts, and showed him how you could get a better grip on the bench press bar by allowing it to rest against the tips of your fingers. And Oscar managed 28 kilos, 2 kilos more than last time. Mr. Avila recorded the new weight in his notebook. More guys came in, among them Mika. He smiled his usual cryptic smile that could mean everything from him just about to give you a nice present to doing something terrible to you. It was the latter that was the case here, even if Mika himself did not understand the full extent of it. On the way to the training session, Johnny had run up to him and asked him to do something since he was planning to set Oscar up. Mika thought that sounded cool. He liked pranks. And anyway, Mika's complete collection of hockey cards had burned up Tuesday night, so paying Oscar back was something he was more than happy to participate in. But for now, he smiled. The session continued. Oscar thought the others were looking at him strangely, but as soon as he tried to meet their eyes, they looked away. Most of all, he would have liked to go home.
No, go. Just go.
But Mr. Avila was watching over him, bolstering him with peppy comments, and there was no possibility of leaving. And anyway, to be here was at least better than being at home. When Oscar was done with the strength training, he was so exhausted he didn't even have the energy to feel bad. He walked off to the showers, lagging a little behind the others, showering with his back facing the room. Not that it mattered. You still showered naked. He stood for a while by the glass divide between the shower room and the pool, used his hand to make a small peephole in the condensation covering the glass, looked at the others jumping around in the pool, chasing each other, throwing balls, and it came over him again. Not a thought formulated in words, but as a virulent feeling.
I am alone. I am completely alone.
Then Mr. Avila caught sight of him, waved for him to enter, to jump in. Oscar shuffled down the short staircase, walked over to the edge of the pool, and looked down into the chemically blue water. He had no spring left in his body, so he climbed in from the ladder, one step at a time, and let himself be enveloped by the rather cold water. Mika sat down on the edge of the pool, smiled and nodded at him. Oscar took a few strokes in the other direction towards Mr. Avila.
Ari!
He saw the ball come flying in the corner of his eye, a moment too late. It landed in the water exactly in front of him and splashed chlorinated water into his eyes. They stung as if from tears. He rubbed his eyes, and when he looked up, he happened to see Mr. Avila looking at him with a pitying look on his face, or disdainful. Perhaps it was only his imagination, but he hit away the ball floating in front of his face and sank. Let his head slink down under the surface of the water, his hair billowing out and tickling around his ears. He stretched his arms out from his body and floated with his face under the surface, bobbing with the water. Pretended he was dead. That he could float here forever. That he would never have to get up and meet the gazes of those who, in the final analysis, only wanted to hurt him. Or that when he finally lifted up his head, the world would be gone. Just him and all this blue. But even with his ears under the water, he could hear the distant sounds, banging sounds from the world above. And when he pulled his face out of the water, it was there, echoing, noisy. Mika had left his place at the edge of the pool, and the others were engaged in some kind of volleyball. The white ball flew into the air, clearly defined against the darkness of the frosted windows. Oscar paddled into a corner of the deep end with only his nose above the water and watched. Mika appeared from the shower room at the other end of the hall, shouted,
"Teacher, the phone in your office is ringing."
Mr. Avila muttered something and stomped away along the edge of the pool. He nodded to Mika and disappeared up into the shower rooms. The last Oscar saw of him was a blurry contour behind the fogged-up glass. Then he was gone. As soon as Mika left the changing rooms, they took up their positions. Johnny and Jimmy slipped into the exercise gym. Roger and Prebber pressed up against the wall next to the doorway. They heard Mika call from inside the swim hall, prepared for action. Soft, barefoot steps that approached passed through the gym. Then, a few seconds later, Mr. Avila walked in through the doors to the changing rooms and over to his office. Prebber had already wound the double tube socks, filled with small change, once around his hand to get a better grip. As soon as the teacher reached the door and stood with his back to him, Prebber stepped out and swung the weight at the back of his head. Prebber was not particularly coordinated, and Mr. Avila must have heard something. Halfway into the swing, the teacher turned his head, and the blow caught him right above the ear. The effect was nonetheless the desired one. He was thrown forward and to one side, hit his head on the door jamb, and fell to the floor. Prebber sat on his chest and tucked the heavy ball of coins into his palm to deliver a more controlled blow if needed. Didn't seem like it. Mr. Avila's arms were trembling slightly, but he didn't put up the slightest resistance. Prebber didn't think he was dead. Didn't look like it, was all. Roger leaned over the prone body as if he had never seen anything like it.
"Is he Turkish or what?"
"Damned if I know. Get the keys!"
While Roger was fumbling for the keys in the teacher's shorts, he saw Johnny and Jimmy walk out of the gym and towards the pool. He got out the keys, tried one after another in the office door, shot a look at the teacher.
"As hairy as an ape. He's got to be a Turk."
"Oh, come on."
Roger sighed, kept trying the keys.
"I'm only saying it for your sake. Probably feels a little better if..."
"Fuck it, and come on."
Roger found the right key and unlocked the door. Before he entered, he pointed to the teacher and said,
"You probably shouldn't be sitting like that. Probably can't breathe if you do."
Prebber slid off his chest, sat down next to the body with his weight at the ready in case Avila tried something. Inside the office, Roger searched through coat pockets, pulled out a wallet with 300 kroner. In a desk drawer, there were 10 unstamped subway cards. He took them as well. Not much in the way of bounty, but that wasn't what this was about. Pure payback. Oscar was still in the corner of the pool blowing bubbles in the water when Johnny and Jimmy walked in. His first reaction wasn't fear, but annoyance. They were fully dressed. They hadn't even taken their shoes off, and Mr. Avila, who was so concerned about... When Jimmy stopped at the edge of the pool and looked out over the water, the fear came. He had met Jimmy a few times, briefly, and thought he seemed horrible even then. Now there was also something about his eyes, the way he was moving his head. Like Tommy and those guys when they have...
Jimmy's gaze found Oscar's, and he realized with a shiver that he was naked.
Jimmy had clothes on, armor. Oscar was in the cold water, and his body was exposed. Jimmy nodded to Johnny,
made a semicircular movement with his hand, and, one on either side of the pool, they started to walk towards Oscar. While he walked, Jimmy screamed to the others,
"Get out of here! Everyone! Out of the water!"
The others were standing still or treading water, indecisive. Jimmy positioned himself at the edge of the pool, took a stiletto out of his jacket pocket, unfolded it, and held it like an arrow at a group of boys. Thrust it in the direction of the other end of the pool. Oscar was pressed up into the corner, watching shivering, while the other boys quickly swam or waded their way to the other end and left him alone in the pool.
"Mr. Avila, where is Mr. Avila?"
A hand gripped him by the hair, fingers taking hold so firmly that his scalp stung and his head was forced back into the corner. Above him he heard Johnny's voice.
"That's my brother, you fucker!"
Oscar's head was banged backwards a couple of times against the tile ledge, and water splashed up into his ears while Jimmy walked over and crouched down with the stiletto in his hand.
"Hi there, Oscar!"
Oscar took in a mouthful of water and started to cough. Every shaking motion of his head that the cough induced made his scalp, which Johnny had grasped even more firmly, burn more. When his coughing spell was over, Jimmy clinked the blade against the tiled edge.
"You know what? I was thinking like this, that we should have a little competition. Now, don't move."
The stiletto passed right above Oscar's forehead as Jimmy handed it to Johnny, taking over the grip on Oscar's head. Oscar didn't dare do anything. He had looked into Jimmy's eyes for a few seconds, and they looked completely crazed, so filled with hate. Oscar's head was pressed into the corner of the pool. His arms were helplessly fumbling in the water. Nothing to hold. He looked for the other boys. They were standing at the shallow end. Mika was in front, still smiling in anticipation. The others looked scared. No one was going to help him.
"So, here's the deal. It's pretty easy, see? Easy rules. You stay under the water for 5 minutes. If you can do that, we'll just put a little scratch in your cheek or something, a keepsake. If you can't do it, well, then, when you come up, I'll take out one of your eyes. Okay? Understand the rules?"
Oscar got his lips above the surface. Water was spurting out of his mouth as he said, shivering,
"Can't do it."
Jimmy shook his head.
"That's your problem. You see that clock? We'll start in 20 seconds. 5 minutes or your eye. Better take a breath now. 10, 9, 8, 7.
Oscar tried to push away with his legs, but he had to stand on tiptoe to get his head above the water, and Jimmy's hand was holding him, making all movement impossible.
"If I pull my hair away, 5 minutes."
When he had tried it on his own, he had managed 3 at most. Almost.
6, 5, 4, 3.
"Mr. Avila. Mr. Avila will come back before
2, 1. 0.
Oscar only managed to take half a breath before his head was pushed under the water. He lost his foothold and the lower half of his body slowly floated up until he lay with his head bent towards his chest just below the surface, his scalp burning like fire as the chlorine came into contact with the rips and tears in the skin. No more than a minute could have gone by before the panic came. He opened his eyes wide and only saw light blue veils of pink that swirled from his head past his eyes when he tried to take hold with his body, although it was impossible since there was nothing to hold on to. His legs were kicking up at the surface, rippling the pale blue in front of his eyes, refracted in light waves. Bubbles rose from his mouth and he threw his arms out, now floating on his back. His eyes were pulled to the white, to the swaying halogen tubes glow in the ceiling. His heart was pounding like a hand against a glass pane, and when he happened to draw water in through his nose, a kind of calm started to spread through his body. But his heart beat harder, more persistently, wanting to live. And again he thrashed desperately, tried to get a grip where there was no grip to be had. And his head was pushed down further. and strangely enough he thought, better this than an eye. After 2 minutes, Micah started to feel really uncomfortable. It seemed like they really wanted to. He looked around at the other boys, but no one seemed prepared to do anything, and he himself only said a half-muffled, Johnny, what the hell? But Johnny didn't seem to hear him. He was absolutely still, on his knees next to the pool, with the tip of the stiletto directed into the water, at the refracted white shape moving down there. Micah looked up at the shower rooms. Why the hell wasn't the teacher back yet? Patrick had run to get him. Why wasn't he coming? Micah withdrew further into the corner, next to the dark glass door that looked out onto the night, folded his arms across his chest. In the corner of his eye, he thought he saw something fall down from the roof outside. Something banged on the glass door so hard it rattled in its frame. He stood on tiptoe, peeked out of the window of regular glass at the very top, and saw a little girl. She lifted her face up to his.
Say, come in.
What? Micah looked back at what was happening in the pool. Oscar's body had stopped moving, but Jimmy still leaned over the edge, holding his head down. Micah's throat hurt when he swallowed.
Whatever happens, just make it stop.
A banging on the glass door, harder this time. He looked out into the darkness. When the girl opened her mouth and shouted at him, he could see that her teeth, that there was something hanging from her arms.
Say that I can come in.
Whatever happens. Micah nodded, said almost inaudibly,
You can come in.
The girl pulled back from the door, disappeared into the darkness. The stuff that was hanging from her arms shimmered for a moment, and then she was gone. Micah turned back to the pool. Jimmy had pulled Oscar's head out of the water and taken the stiletto back from Johnny, moving it near Oscar's face, aiming. A speck of light was visible in the dark middle window, and a split second later, it shattered. The reinforced glass didn't shatter like regular glass. It exploded into thousands of tiny, rounded fragments that, after flying out into the hall, over the water, glittering like myriad white stars, landed with a rustle at the edge of the pool. Epilogue. Friday the 13th of November.
Friday the 13th.
Gunnar Holmberry was sitting in the empty principal's office, trying to get his notes in order. He had spent the whole day at the Blackaberry School, studying the scene of the crime, talking with students. Two technicians from downtown and a bloodstain analyst from the National Laboratory of Forensic Science were still securing evidence down by the pool. Two youths had been killed there last night. A third had disappeared. He had even talked to Mary Louise, the class teacher, had realized that the missing boy, Oscar Erickson, was the same one who had raised his hand and answered his question about heroin 3 weeks ago. Holmberry remembered him.
I've read a lot and stuff.
Also recalled that he had thought the boy would be the first out to the police car. He would have taken him for a spin in it, maybe. If possible, bolstered his self-confidence a little. But the boy had not shown up. And now he was gone. Gunnar scanned his notes from his conversations with the boys who had been at the pool last night. Their accounts basically matched up, and one word had turned up frequently. Angel. Oscar Erickson had been rescued by an angel. The same angel who, according to the witnesses, had ripped Johnny and Jimmy Forshberry's heads off and left them in the bottom of the pool. When Gunnar told the crime scene photographer, who used his underwater camera to eternalize the image of where the two heads had been found, about this angel, he had said,
Hardly one from heaven in that case.
No. He looked out the window, tried to think of a reasonable explanation. In the schoolyard, the flag was at half-mast. Two psychologists had been present for the boy's questioning, since several of them were showing worrying signs of talking too light-heartedly about what they had witnessed, as if it were a film, something that had not happened in real life. And that was what one would most like to believe. The problem was that, to a certain extent, the bloodstain technician corroborated what the boys had said. The blood had left traces in such places, ceiling, beams, that the immediate impression was that its course had been made by someone who was flying. It was this one was now trying to explain away, and would probably succeed in doing. The boy's gym teacher was in intensive care with a serious concussion and would not be available for questioning until tomorrow at the earliest. He would probably not give them anything new. Gunnar pressed his hands against his temples so his eyes narrowed, glanced down at his notes. Angel, wings, the head exploded, the stiletto, trying to drown Oscar. Oscar was completely blue, the kind of teeth like a lion. Picked Oscar up. And the only thing he managed to think was, I should go away for a while.
Is that yours?
Stefan Larsen, the conductor on the Stockholm-Karlstad line, pointed to the bag on the luggage rack. You didn't see those much these days. A real old-fashioned trunk. The boy in the compartment nodded and held out his ticket. Stefan punched it.
Is someone meeting you at the other end?
The boy shook his head.
It's not as heavy as it looks.
No, of course. What have you got in there, if you don't mind my asking?
A little bit of everything.
Stefan checked his watch, punched the air. It will be evening when we arrive, you know.
Hmm.
The boxes. Are they also yours?
Yes.
Look, I don't mean to... How are you going to manage?
I'll get help. Later.
I see. Right. Have a good trip, then.
Thanks.
Stefan pulled the door to the compartment shut and walked to the next one. The boy seemed like he knew what he was doing. If Stefan had been sitting there with that much luggage, he would hardly have looked so... happy. But then, it's probably different when you're young.
Copyright in text, Jan Ivida Lindqvist, 2004. Copyright in translation, Ebba Segerberry, 2007. Copyright in recording, Quercus Publishing, PLC, 2010.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this programme.